KALW.
Sometimes I look outside and people are just looking at them and like taking pictures, and it makes us feel really good because it makes everyone feel really happy.
San Francisco artist Hal Peterson connects his neighbors through his crocheted creations.
So this has become a neighborhood where you know each other. That was not what I set out to do, but it is what happens over time.
We explore the science of happiness and helping. Then we get a deeper understanding about the psychological link between them.
If it makes you feel good, that's the helper's high. That's the warm glow. You feel good because you're doing things that benefit something beyond yourself.
And we'll hear a reading from Santa Rosa author Heather Chavez. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. There is scientific research that proves there are benefits to being kind. Kindness can increase happiness, energy, pleasure, and even lifespan. We all know at least one do-gooder type, right? Well, if you don't, KALW's Johanna Miyake is about to introduce you to one right now.
San Francisco's Noe Valley has long been known for having an eclectic mix of shops and eateries along 24th Street. A few blocks away, a small stretch of the neighborhood is becoming known for something else. Creatures in their not-so-natural habitats. Fairies are nestled in bushes, bunnies hang from tree branches, and ants wearing strawberries for hats march up the tree trunks.
So I put the ants in this tree. I had a total of 11 ants, and I split them in two. So there are five in this tree, and they're further up in front of the blue and yellow house. There are another four.
For the last 6 years or so, Hal Peterson has been dotting the trees on his block with colorful yarn creatures he makes by hand, like the koala's 8-year-old Sienna says are her favorites.
I called this one Pumpkin, and I call that one Chompy. Chompy's Pumpkin's older sister.
Hal is well known around here. The tall Dutchman with kind eyes, a goatee, and quirky glasses can often be seen in front of his cheerful yellow house, sporting one of his many colorful hand-knit scarves. On the sidewalk in front of his house, there's usually chalk art drawn by neighborhood kids. They know he's the go-to guy for hand-knit creatures and for rescuing the occasional school project.
Me and my friends did a secret garden, and we wanted an animal for our secret garden, and all of us loved koalas, so we picked a koala. My friend made a koala, but he was not so good.
So then I was like, Mom, can we ask Cub if we can have a koala for my school project?
Hal's neighbor, Gail Cornwell, says his creations have become an attraction on their block.
I came across it just walking with my kids. We live a few blocks down, and he's on our route down to the restaurants and shops. And so, gosh, I think we saw a couple pop up here first. And then I think what happened is some kids complimented them. And so Hal, being Hal, made some for outside their house. And then it just spread, and he was busy and delighted all the children in the neighborhood, and they kept popping up in trees everywhere.
I have always liked making stuffed animals. I've always liked making puppets and dolls. I found some patterns on the internet that I really liked, that spoke to me, so I started to make some. Now, I'm a little bit too big to play with toys, so I started to just give them away to children here in the street. There are always a lot of children walking by here.
Hal embraced the art of crocheting, macrame, and embroidery as a young boy growing up in the Netherlands in the 1960s.
I've done needlecrafts my whole life. From the moment I could hold a needle, I've been doing needlecrafts. My mom was a knitter. My grandma was a crocheter. And I have three sisters. They were also into crafts. And that's how I learned.
Hal's family encouraged him to pursue his passion. Even the local craft store owner was enthusiastic about his creations. But his peers were anything but supportive.
You're not supposed to be doing that as a little boy in a farmer's town in Holland. And especially when I grew up a little bit, I was often made fun of. So I started hiding my work.
He longed to express on the outside how he felt on the inside, but didn't feel free to do it. Years later, he met his future husband, someone he could be himself with. And he also moved to a place where he felt he belonged.
I moved here to be with my husband, the love of my life. And I love this city. I love the quirkiness of this city. So I fell as well in love with my husband as with this city.
And he found other men who shared his hobby here too.
I'm in a knitting group for men where a group of us guys sit and knit.
Halb started sharing his craft after he felt a rise in tensions that began dividing the country around the 2016 elections.
There were a couple of things coming together in politics, a couple of things about around the house here that kind of made me feel sad and a little bit locked up, like I can again, I'm not allowed to be who I am. So I thought, you know, instead of giving them away to children, maybe I should put those animals and my creations in trees so that the whole world can see them. And I started very carefully with two little birds in my neighbor's tree. And people were reacting on that very nicely. So I started to do a little bit more, and I started to add more and more and more. And the two children of a little bit further up the street asked me if I would do some animals for in their tree too.
Sisters Margaret and Beatrice, who are 11 and 9.
We had seen at first that he hung some spiders up over by that tree, so we asked if we could have some monkeys or spiders, and he gave us monkeys.
Like, sometimes when we have play dates at our house, our friends come over and they're like, ooh, monkeys in the tree, and we're like, oh yeah, those are our monkeys. Our neighbor knitted them.
Sometimes I look outside and people are just looking at them and like taking pictures, and it makes us feel really good because it makes everyone feel really happy.
So it seems happiness breeds more happiness. In fact, researchers say what Halb experiences is real. Psychologists have identified a state of euphoria reported by people doing good. They call it helper's high. And it's based on the theory that giving produces endorphins in the brain that provide a mild version of a morphine high.
Before we lived here, we lived on a street, Roosevelt Way. We've lived there 4 or 5 years, and I never got to know my neighbors, never, ever anyone. And here, that's a little bit the same. Everybody's got their own house and keeps to themselves. And what I love is, because of all those animals that I've been putting out, I've known now a whole bundle of my neighbors.
Neighbor Gail Cornwall agrees.
I think it really did bring people together because, as you can see at the house, you know, new things are popping up all the time. And so we don't just walk by, like we stop and we look to see what's new, and then other neighbors stop and look to see what's new. So we actually met a lot of neighbors with kids just on the sidewalk out front, checking things out.
And so this has become a neighborhood where you know each other. And I think that is also that was not what I set out to do, but it is what happened over time.
I've really felt that he just makes everyone feel way happier with yarn bombing everything. And it makes everything just more brighter.
If this story made you feel a little brighter and you're inspired to go out in the world and pay it forward, you are experiencing what scientists call positive conformity. It's the theory that people not only imitate positive actions, but also the spirit of those actions. In other words, kindness itself is contagious. In San Francisco, I'm Johanna Miyake for CrossCurrents.
Thanks, Johanna. You can find more of her stories and Halb's creations at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In our last story, we heard about this thing called the helper's high, a feeling we get when we are in service to others. We wanted to go deeper and understand that concept psychologically. What exactly happens in the brain when we help someone? I talked to a psychologist to explain, Dr. Emiliana R. Simon-Thomas. She's the science director at the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley.
The helper's high is one name for it. Another name for it is the warm glow. And it's basically a biological process that reinforces generosity and kindness. Humans have evolved with this urge or innate motivation to invest in one another's welfare. And so we have these pathways that speak in the language of dopamine, which is a common neurotransmitter that signals pleasure and reward, oxytocin, which is a neuropeptide that signals trust and social significance. And so the same way that we're built to have an intrinsic reward or signal, this is good, when we care for our children, we feel that same thing when we care for anyone who is vulnerable or going through a difficult time or could benefit from our assistance or support or presence.
That's interesting because I wanted to ask you about what kind of help, and does it matter what kind of help you're giving and to whom? For example, walking down the street, helping an unhoused person, giving them money, giving charity, being involved in a charity, and caring for a parent. To me, they seem different.
The original urge, the innate drive, that core motivation to approach and help doesn't differ between the different scenarios that you described. It doesn't matter if we encounter a person who doesn't have a home to live in, or we are responding to a family member who is struggling with their financial security, or we see a stranger who has dropped all of their groceries because the handle on their bag ripped, right? All of those situations involve another person who could benefit from our help. And that first urge is the same. And it comes again from the anticipation that we'll be able to help and that our help will matter, that it will change the plight of this person in front of us.
Mm. I want to talk about intention, the intention behind doing a good deed or helping someone, and whether that matters and makes a difference. And this idea of altruism for the sake of altruism and this idea of the selfish altruism. Can you talk a little bit about what role intention has? Because I can be going out and doing all the good deeds in the world because it makes me feel good. Is that the right intention? And does it work the same way in our brain?
I think it's one and the same. If it makes you feel good, that's the helper's high. That's the warm glow. You feel good because you're doing things that benefit something beyond yourself, right? You are contributing to the greater good in some way that is measurable in your own mind. I don't think that the fact that humans are designed to feel good about being generous means that being generous is not real. I don't understand why that notion has kind of gripped some people's thinking. We have evolved as an ultra-social species. Our adaptive success as a species is contingent on our ability to coordinate effort, to live in collectives, to collaborate and cooperate. And in order for that to work, we have to have this pro-social demeanor. We have to be invested in one another. So we're just designed that way. Now, I just want to bring up the possibility. It's a little different than what you said, which is that I am generous and kind and helpful because I get status or prestige from that, right?
My teenage daughter and I were having a conversation about this, and she said there's all these people on TikTok. You know, they do a good thing and then they film it on TikTok and then they get these thousands of followers and the likes and the followers. And to her, it takes away from the actual charity. And we had a whole conversation about this. It was so interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, it's complicated and it's nuanced. The helper who is helping for the sake of reputation or status without actually having any contact with the target of their help probably isn't actually getting as much of a benefit from it, right? You could measure the difference in that warm glow or that helper's high between the person who's like, okay, I'm going to write a check for $10,000 so that my spouse won't pester me about our charitable behaviors for this year. I don't really care who's getting it. I don't really want to like be involved in their life or the situation. I'm just taking care of something so that I don't have to worry about something that, you know, might bother me. That person is not really experiencing a helper's high, right? They may be sort of checking off or removing some kind of unpleasantry, but they're not experiencing a helper's high. The whole social media question is also complicated, right? Because on the one hand, there's something wonderful about normalizing generosity and helpful behaviors by putting them out there, right? By having a lot of people see, like, this is okay to do. You don't have to just be selfish and figure out new routines for your makeup and your sense of style and your look. You can also invest your time and energy in helping other people, serving your community. Like, that's real and it matters and it's normative. It's a social norm. So on the other hand, I also understand that there's the potential that something about what they're doing is self-serving in terms of their eligibility for future opportunities, for more press, more publicity. And, you know, it's tricky. Mm.
What's next in this field? What are you looking at right now?
Gosh, I mean, at the Greater Good Science Center, we're trying to figure out what people can do in a daily way that can awaken that urge more robustly. So if we actually do kindness, there's, you know, it sounds like a Berkeley bumper sticker, random acts of kindness, but it's actually a real empirical intervention that researchers have studied. If you get people 3 times a day for 7 days to commit random acts of kindness and measure them before they do this and after they do this and compare it to people who have, you know, done little random acts of organizing or something else that they think is going to be good for them but is not focused on kindness, the people who do the random acts of kindness feel happier. They feel less lonely. They feel a greater sense of connection with what matters to them. They feel like they belong in their community. So we can do this. It's just, how do we compete with the social media, popular media powers that be that are constantly trying to convince us that the secret is about the self?
Ooh, good luck.
Yeah. You know, we've lived for this. We've had this for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we've had this kind of indulgent, hedonic power in greed is good kind of ethos as Americans, you know, or an individualistic kind of cultural identity. And I don't know, I think we're facing the dire consequences of that, you know?
Emiliana R. Simon Thomas is the science director at the Greater Good Science Center. You can go deeper into their research and hear their podcast. We've got a link at KELW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we'll hear a story about a childhood game gone wrong. It's another episode from KELW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Heather Chavez lives in Santa Rosa. Her book, Blood Will Tell, came out on April 26th, 2022.
It's about Frankie and her younger sister, Izzy, and how a game played 5 years before might be linked to a teen girl's abduction. I'm reading from the first chapter. I felt the woman's attention as heat on my back. The man's, too. Even in my modest shorts and t-shirt, I felt abruptly too exposed. As I positioned the nozzle in the tank of my F-150, I pricked my ears. Raising a four-year-old had made me an expert at listening. For glass breaking, doors squeaking, guilty pauses. Behind me, the silence seemed to be thick with hostility. The strangers, whom I was certain I'd never seen before, both buzzed with it. Why? While my tank filled, the warmth on my back spread to my neck, causing the hairs there to stand on end. When, finally, the car door slammed, I inhaled sharply. Fumes burned my nose. I glanced over my shoulder toward the couple in the matching San Francisco Giants hats, who for some reason did not like me.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can hear more readings at kelw.org/newarrivals. And before we go, here's some new music from a Bay Area band. Is from San Francisco band The Reds, Pinks, and Purples. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hanisha Herjani, Sydney Fishman, Aaron Kopp, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tenz, Shirin Adil, Shaya Levitt, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Henat Baba.